to the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hello, how are you doing? Thank you for downloading the very first What Bitcoin Did podcast. My name is Peter McCormack, and for those who don't know me, I am a full-time Bitcoin and crypto trader, and I operate a website called whatbitcoindid.com. I set this site up around 6 months ago as I'd been getting approached by a whole bunch of friends and family who'd been asking me how they too can get involved in trading both Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. And as I know how extremely volatile these markets are, how easy it is to lose money and how easy it is to get lost in the hype, and also how important security is, I wanted to put together something that would help people to safely start investing in this space. And since launching the blog, I've been really lucky to meet a whole bunch of really cool people, from crypto traders to investors and blockchain specialists. And recently I thought it'd be a good idea to add a podcast to the website where I would interview some of these people and just see how Bitcoin and crypto had changed their lives. So what I want to do with these interviews is find these people, what they're doing, what part of the space they're working in, and see what their experience is. Share this with you to help you become a better trader. And my first interview is an absolute belter. I've managed to get some time with a chap called Luke Martin, aka Venture Coinist, who is one of the leading crypto traders within the vibrant Twitter community. Luke has been applying his experience in finance and Forex to crypto and providing key insights and technical analysis to anyone who follows him. And this has helped him gain a really good, loyal following in Twitter. This dude is only 23 and he is smashing it. I've personally been tracking him for a couple of months now. I've been following his tweets and the posts he put out there have definitely improved my trading skills. We've been trying to get together the last few times I've been in LA and we haven't been able to make our paths cross. But on this most recent trip, Luke was able to spare me some time at his place to just talk all things crypto. So I wanted this interview to focus specifically on things that would help you guys as traders improve your skills and make more money from the markets. And Luke was really open with me. He talked in depth about his approach to strategy, the coins he likes, also all his thoughts on everything from forks to ICOs. This podcast is full of gold dust, loads of tips that you guys can start applying to your trading strategy today. So I suggest you sit down, take your time, listen closely, keep notes, and then follow this guy on social media. I also want to say, look, outside of crypto, he was just a really nice dude. He was totally humble about everything he's achieved, and I just really like the guy. I will add into the show notes on my website links to his website, to all his social following, so you can go and check him out. And listen, look, this is my first interview. I would appreciate any support I can get from you guys. So if you could give me a review on iTunes, that would be really cool. If you want to follow me on Twitter or Instagram, my handle is @WhatBitcoinDid. Also, you can check out my website, whatbitcoindid.com, and sign up for my newsletter. And lastly, please share this with any of your friends who you think might like it. I am hoping to get a podcast out every couple of weeks. I've got a couple already lined up, and I'm looking to meet some of the best traders and blockchain people out there. So feel free to get in touch with any feedback you have, or if you have any thoughts for future shows. Lastly, I just want to do a couple of thanks. Firstly, Luke himself. I really appreciate him giving the time to be the first guy on the podcast. And then secondly, I just want to thank my buddy Rich Roll, who helped me put this together. Rich is one of the leading podcasters out there. I've personally been following him and listened to his shows for the last couple of years. I met him and his wife in Italy last year, and I've met his family out here in LA. He's become a really good friend. He's always there giving me help and advice. And when I approached him to, you know, with the idea for the show, he was like, cool, go for it, and started helping me find the right equipment and how to set up the show. So listen, go check out his podcast. He is a vegan, he is an ultra athlete, he's an author, and just a really good dude. You will find it by searching on iTunes for the Rich Roll podcast. I listen to it all the time. It's full of really cool interviews. Okay, I think we're good to go. Here's the interview with Luke. I hope you like it. Give me any feedback. Okay. Hey, man.
Hello.
Thank you for having me here in your home to do this. I've obviously been stalking you on Twitter for a couple of months and gradually speaking to you. And what really stood out for me when I followed you on Twitter was these big, long explanations. You were doing like 18 tweets in a row to explain some kind of Forex theory, which I didn't understand. But it became obvious that you were standing out in the Twitter space compared to others by having some kind of background in trading or Forex. So if you can just start, can you just give me some kind of background of how you got into all of this?
Yeah, definitely. First of all, thanks for having me on. I got into all this. I was working for a Forex and derivative company in San Francisco. That office eventually shut down. Our CEO was doing some less than ethical things. That office shut down and I was trying to search, you know, how I was going to make money. I wanted to go back to grad school. I ended up moving out to California, started a master's in applied finance program, and also started a Twitter account. I was getting into trading cryptos and mining some cryptos as well. And really quickly kind of took off. I was sharing my charts and looking at what other people were doing. And I saw a niche in that there was a lot of people posting charts and posting memes. Not a lot of people were taking it seriously or trying to take a professional route in explaining market dynamics and how everything actually worked. So that kind of took off really quickly. I was also managing my money and my brother's money and a few friends' money, and that took off as well. And 2 months later, here we are.
Wow. And so what was your first exposure to crypto and Bitcoin? How did you get introduced to it?
Yeah. First exposure was me and a couple of friends wanting to invest in Bitcoin or Ethereum. We didn't want to buy it because the price is so high. So we started mining. We tried to mine on our laptops. My laptop almost caught on fire. So we all committed a couple $1,000, built a few Ethereum mining rigs, and you know, it really took off from that.
And in terms of trading crypto, when did this really start? And tell us about the whole dropping out of college for it, because I think that's going to be interesting to other people.
Yeah. So I wanted to be an analyst or front office at some trading desk or something in investment management. My previous job, it was more kind of a sales role or dealing with, you know, client inbound. I wasn't actually able to critically think or kind of give my analysis of the markets. I just wasn't able to do that. So when I was working at that job to make extra money on the side, I started writing articles, market analysis, and stuff like that. So when I got to college, I was trying to follow the same path. What can I do right now to gain experience and to really just start doing the job that I want to do before I have it? I started sharing that stuff on Twitter, trying to explain my views, sharing my charts really quickly. I think it made people some money. I think a lot of people just want me to make them money. My actual goal is to try to teach you the process as well. I think that value lasts a lot longer. But the combination of those two things, like you said, the threads where it actually explains things, and then also people making some money really quick. I watched the Twitter blow up. I realized the potential in, you know, how big my personal brand or creating a brand and focusing on this and working in the cryptocurrency space for the long term. I realized, you know, this is the chance of a lifetime almost. And it was like, why go to college? You know, this is the job that I want to do. And now I get to work in markets. Now I get to critically think and share my ideas and speculate. And it's like, this is why I'm here. I might as well go for it. So, yeah.
And you chose to dox yourself. You know, you're out there as you are, venture coinist, but Luke Martin, you know, mm-hmm. A lot of people got their names crypto, some kind of person from a film or history. And we understand why. We talked about that, you know, security reasons. I'm like you. I'm out there as who I am. I have my name. But yep. You chose to do the same. And you're out there as one of the leading investors. So why is that?
Yeah, so it was funny. I was having a chat with my friend, Ian Bellina, who I networked and met in San Francisco. And I was asking him how his experience had been. He was one of the only guys that had his actual face out there. A lot of guys that maybe have been following me for a long time remember this. My picture used to be of Warren Buffett drinking a Coke. And I was anonymous, you know, for the same reason, security and all that. And I was talking to Ian. And my main concern with coming out wasn't that, you know, security reasons, while that does play a big role, and I've had to take some pretty significant steps to make sure I'm safe. My big concern was that I'm so young, and people were going to be kind of concerned in taking me seriously, and that, you know, I actually had merit or actually knew what I was talking about. So he kind of convinced me that it was the right move. I think, you know, if you're going to be buying any of my services, or even if you're not, and just taking my analysis seriously, I don't really want you paying or looking at a picture of Warren Buffett drinking a Coke. I'd rather, you know, you actually put a face with the name, understand who I am and understand my background and stuff like that. So it kind of just aligns with the values of, I'm very transparent. You know, I like to do my business with a lot of integrity. I think it's good for business, and, you know, it's opened up a lot of doors too. It's given me some unique opportunities.
And in the, Twitter space, it feels like, even very recently, even over the last few weeks, you've suddenly become right in the middle of all the other key traders, not only discussing trading, but, you know, all the bants and the piss taking between you guys. When was the kind of tipping point for you when you realized that this was really happening?
Yeah, it's hard to say. Maybe I think kind of when I started getting recognized, and not, you know, in person yet, but when people, you know, would actually shout me out, people that I respect in the space, and guys that I really were looking to for insight and advice, like Ari Paul and a couple of the other leading thinkers or traders. There's a couple guys on there that I work with, Zeus and Rand. When a couple of them were actually, you know, recognizing my work and saying, you know, this guy has very sound, a sound process or sound TA, you know, that was huge for me to finally get recognized. It was pretty humbling. And from there, you know, I think it solidified my space and it gave me a little bit of confidence to keep going.
That's really cool. And then within that, because you mentioned the other people, like who out, because I often get asked, like, who should I be following on Twitter? Mm-hmm. And I just have a list of people. Like, if you were going to say to people there to follow maybe five people on Twitter, who would you say are, like, the really decent ones who know what they're talking about?
Yeah, that's tough. And there's so many people that, that provide different things, but just five, just a couple shills out there. I'm going to throw Ari Paul. I think he has great institutional insight. Chris Bernisky, I think he probably has, I don't even think it's a probably, I think he has the leading valuation theory right now in valuing these cryptocurrencies. I think Zeus, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I think you got that right.
Yeah. He's pretty spot on with fundamental analysis. He has a good understanding of what's going on and understands the bigger picture. Crypto Rand is a guy that I work with on a few different projects, and I also respect him for his TA ability. Last one, Crypto Bully is another guy he's just kind of been a really solid kind of resource for me to bounce different ideas off of and stuff like that. And he also lightens the mood.
Yeah, he does. Okay, so you've talked a lot about, to me previously, about the business and such, and we'll cover that in a bit. But in terms of trading, in terms of trading strategy, the market's always changing, right? But what's your kind of, do you have a broad strategy or do you have a coin strategy? How do you approach this?
Yeah, so I approach it from a more macro perspective than I think a lot of other traders or crypto speculators kind of use. I think a lot of people spend time, you know, in a micro sense, dissecting and looking at a coin's roadmap and trying to understand what's going on with that specific coin. I like to step back, and it's probably because I came from FX, so understanding the macro, bigger picture, and what's driving the market and relative valuations and such is so important. So I look at where Bitcoin is, and I always draw this channel. If you follow me on Twitter, you see this log channel, this thing I've had all of 2017.
Is that the one that it did break out recently, didn't it?
It did break out, but it came back in. It was retained. So I use this Bitcoin channel to determine, you know, how is Bitcoin priced? Is it near the top of the channel? Is it expensive? Is it strong? Is it near the bottom of the channel? Is it weak? Should I be moving into Bitcoin? And I use that as the timing mechanism for everything. So if Bitcoin's at the top of the channel, you know, I look historically what's been the right move there, moving into alts, taking some profits into fiat, and letting Bitcoin correct and letting those alts breathe. So I use Bitcoin as the real timing mechanism and try to look from a much bigger perspective. And then when the time arises, then I start moving into alts.
Right. But with Bitcoin, do you tend to hold more, or do you just go long with that and always hold a Bitcoin position, or would you ever come completely out of Bitcoin?
I would never come completely out of Bitcoin, just because it's like stocks. And I'm not sure who said this. Maybe it was Rob Arnott, one of those really a quant kind of god, I would say. He talks about the positive skew in stocks, and that if you're not invested in stocks for 3 or 5 days out of the full calendar year, you know, you miss out on I don't know the exact percentage. It's a large percentage of gains just because stocks are always going to go up. You want to be holding an asset that's in a bullish trend, because if you're out of the market, you're going to miss those days with the massive gains. And if you miss only a few of those, it really limits your position. Just because of the business I'm in, I'm always holding Bitcoin. And then on BitMEX and some other sites, I also do speculate or hedge by going short on Bitcoin sometimes as well.
Are there any other coins that you hold long-term as well that you consider a key? Because I know before, look, you've talked about, and a lot of people talk about, if you're going long on any altcoin, you're short Bitcoin, and that confuses a lot of people to begin mm-hmm. with. But are there any other coins you think you should be holding long-term?
Yeah, it's really tough. I think just from a risk perspective, so if you think about all these coins, you know, I'm not sure what percentage of them are going to be around in the future. I'm sure that a large percentage of them probably won't be. So I'm holding some of the larger cap coins for the long term just because they have the best chance of being around. I'm fairly confident that Bitcoin will be around. Ethereum, you know, Litecoin, coins like that will be around. Holding onto a coin, you know, some of these lower caps, I'm not sure if they last. I'm not sure what happens in this network, in this asset class, whether, you know, some of the coins just drift away. So some of the larger caps, Ethereum I hold just to invest in ICOs. That has since dropped off. I'm not investing in any ICOs right now. And then Litecoin, I would also consider holding long-term, except I'm not right now. I really just keep a core Bitcoin holding, and then depending on where Bitcoin is in that channel again, that's when I move into alts.
See, this is some of the advice that I think a lot of people need early on. And like you know, we were talking before we, you know, started recording about the number of people coming into the space, you know, Coinbase, what was it? They took 100,000 in one day. So we know how many people are coming in. Probably like me, you're having buddies phone you and Facebook you and message you and saying, how do I get involved and what do I do and what I should buy? If a new person's coming into the space, what are the first few things you kind of advise them to do?
Yeah, so this is probably... This is maybe something or a piece of advice that a lot of people probably don't want to hear. And I actually plan on sharing this on Twitter and a few other networks pretty soon. But most people probably shouldn't be actively trading as much as they are, or even trading at all. Some people should probably just invest in Bitcoin, make that the core holding of your portfolio, invest in Bitcoin and move a lot slower than maybe what you're seeing on Twitter or what you're seeing in these Telegram rooms. You know, don't chase the coin of the day or the coin of the week. Take a step back, and instead of trying to determine if alts are going to go up today or tomorrow or next week, you know, zoom out on the chart, see when alts have peaked. It was in June, it was in September. Where were alts, you know, doing that well? What was Bitcoin doing? Try to understand the bigger perspective, move a little bit slower, and try not to get all caught up in the excitement of it.
Yeah, but you know as much as me, it's addictive, and once people start, they do start trading.
It is.
So I've told people the same, but if they are going to start trading, what are the kind of key kind of early mistakes that you made, or the key things that they should be focused on if they are going to trade? You know, what are the things you think, you know, the mistakes that people make early on?
Yeah, I think two of the easiest kind of rules you can implement are position sizing and determining exits before you ever enter a trade. So those are two things that I make, you know, sound rules. And I have a very objective system. My systematic, you know, kind of whole process is all rules based. But those are two rules, and there are some things that I'll change and that are variable. Those are two things that never change for me. So determining your position sizing, whether that's a 2% of your portfolio per trade, whether it's a 5% or 10%, which would be a very large position for me, you know, using that to manage risk, and also having those exits picked out. So what happens to a lot of people, and this has kind of become a meme or a joke in the community, is when you invest in alt, suppose you invested in some kind of alt in June or September, if you look at any of the alt charts till now, they have just been going straight down. And a lot of people that get into those trades end up bag holders, is what we call them. If they determined an exit before they got in there, they could have limited their loss to maybe 5 or 10%. And then you can step back and reconsider, what is the market doing now? What's the environment now? And where can I get back into this investment?
Are you holding any bags?
I am not holding any bags.
Okay, so that's really cool. That's really helpful. Are there any big mistakes you've made early on that have really changed the way you trade?
Yeah, overtrading. Overtrading is the biggest one. Coming from FX, it was really, even the technical analysis. So a lot of the stuff is the same, and the you know, everything, price and volume data is always going to be the same, but the way that these assets work and the correlations and, you know, the different forces that are driving these coins and the narratives that are driving these coins' prices are a lot different. I was used to more normal price action. Things would move up, things would move down. In this space, you know, you're constantly watching coins break out for a 500% gain and then retrace and kind of sit docile for months. So understanding the timing with these things and what is actually driving different price movements was the biggest thing. And when you get into the space, you're not going to understand that. You look at Bittrex, you look at all the flashing lights, and you just pick coins blindly. So taking a step back and actually developing a strategy for timing and moving into alts was the biggest thing that helped with that over trading.
And obviously there are a lot of coins you can follow. Do you have a limit to the number you can follow? How do you choose? Because you can't map all, you know, 1,000 on CoinMarketCap. So how are you picking and choosing?
Yeah. So kind of building off that macro perspective, and just coming from a traditional finance world, I viewed these things in sectors. Whether or not there's set sectors like we have in stocks, there's not a specific eight or an agreed upon eight sectors, but I'll follow coins that interest me the most and things that I understand. So finance and gaming and gambling coins and privacy coins. I try to pick coins that have utility now and that the value isn't all in the discounted future utility. So I think privacy coins have a lot of utility right now. Stores of value and payment systems have a lot of utility right now. So I try to follow those coins. I understand their utility. Things like Aventis and the Power Ledger, some of these coins that have, you know, in the future, they might have great utility and they might change the world. Right now, I don't understand how they can hold these valuations if the utility is so far down the road. So I narrow it down into sectors.
And, you know, when a trade goes bad, because it does, we've all done it. We've had ones where we've looked at and, you know, we shit ourselves because it's gone just the wrong way. How do you handle that? Like mentally, how do you handle that? How do you deal with that?
Yeah. Hopefully determining a stop will stop that from happening. But if it does happen and you're stuck holding a bag or you just lost 50%, my best tip and something that I learned both through doing and both through watching, you know, hundreds of clients that I used to work with in the FX and derivative space and what works and what doesn't, is don't try to trade to get back to break even. So don't, you know, if you lose 50%, don't wager more on the next trade just to try to get back. Stick to your system, stick to the good habits, and let
it's the gambler's error.
Yeah, exactly. Let that play out as opposed to, you know, doubling down on the trade you just lost.
And do you have any views on day trading? Do you have any thoughts of that? Does it mean anything to you?
Yeah, I day trade. I trade, you know, every single day. I also know that that's probably not you know, feasible or possible for everyone with full-time jobs. So I work with a really wide range of people. What I would advise and what I want people to think about is what makes the most sense for them. If they're only able to commit a few hours a day, you know, when you get off work, it might not make the most sense for you to jump on your computer and try to get 10 trades in. You know, don't force it. I day trade because I can do this stuff all day long. But some people, like I said earlier, if you don't have a background in this stuff, if active trading just doesn't sit, you know, suit your strengths, maybe slow down and, you know, take positional trading.
So we've had a quite a crazy month in crypto. You know, ever since we were aware the Bitcoin Cash fault was going to come, ignoring all the arguments previously that have come out about big blocks v small blocks. I mean, do you have an opinion on that?
No, I don't have an opinion. It's funny that there's a real tribalism around these coins, and I understand it. There's a tribalism or a sense of, you know, choosing a side in a lot of things that we do in culture, but I really don't. And I think it's because I'm new to the space. So I don't have some of the same mentalities or understand where, you know, some of these guys come from. I read up on it and I understand the different arguments for both sides. I really try to eliminate that and trade what the market gives me. I don't mind, you know, if Bitcoin Cash is going up and Bitcoin is going down, I'm fine playing that trade and vice versa.
You posted up about that yesterday, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And what did you make of the forks and all the action around the forks? And do you think we'll get any more? Do you think this is it? We've got some kind of clean space.
I think next year we're going to see a lot more forks. So that's what a couple of the guys I've been following that are usually spot on have been saying as well. I think we might see less ICOs. I think we're going to see more forks.
So forks are the new ICO.
I've heard 2018 is going to be the year of the fork. Yeah. So yeah, a lot of volatility until, you know, we start to understand kind of as a group, as an asset class, what to expect here. This is still, you know, a pretty big experiment we're watching all play out.
And you mentioned the Bitcoin Cash, Bcash. They don't like to be called that, but yeah. I personally have noticed this inverse relationship because one of the things I do is, which I tell people not to do, but I margin trade CFDs on the movements between Bcash and Bitcoin Cash because they're totally inverse. Do you think that's going to continue, and why do you think that's happening?
Yeah, I do the same. I trade that as well. And regardless of the camp you're in, because I actually speak with a lot of guys who aren't in the same boat as I am, and they really hate Bitcoin Cash or Bcash. They might be happy I'm calling it Bcash. I'm going to trade that relationship. And even if you don't trade it, use it. So there's more than just a correlation there. I think there's some causation as well. And when the Bitcoin Cash team is selling their Bitcoin holdings, or when there's this increased FUD and people don't know what Bitcoin represents, and I take it as when I see talking heads and Bitcoin core developers and big guys in the space, whether they're brushing it off and saying Bitcoin Cash doesn't have a place, the fact that they're even talking about it and giving it the time of day shows that, there's definitely some concern. So I trade that relationship as well. I think it's driving a lot more than just correlation. I think there's causation there as well.
What do you think though of the manipulation in the market and all the views on manipulation in the market? Because a lot of people are saying, the two biggest pumps on Bcash, the one was last weekend, one this weekend. Most of the volume's coming out of Korea. It appears to be a base which is potentially near the people who've got interest in it is, and the volumes seem to spike at the time when least people are trading.
Yeah, it's tough. This is such, a lot of people call it the Wild West, and that's exactly what it is. We're seeing, a brand new space. A problem with this space still is even as it grows and as more people are joining in, and some of these coins, relatively are liquid. So Bitcoin is more liquid than something like, Mu or NAV. There's still just a lack of liquidity. So when there's a big spike in volume or stuff like that, when big players are moving in and out of these coins, there's going to be big movement in the coins. It's just, there's just not enough liquidity to absorb those big buys and sells. So, whether it's manipulation or whether it's normal price activity, I'm going to see what the market is doing and I'm going to trade it. I try not to pay too much attention to it.
Do you think that there's a potential in the future that, if some of these things that people are doing are clearly things where if they're happening in the standard in the stock market or Forex, you can end up in prison. Mm-hmm. So there is some things which are, can't be proved, but arguably fraudulent. Do you think that is something that will change? Do you think there's regulation going to come over it, or do you just not even care?
No, I think regulation is definitely going to step in. I definitely do. I pay attention to it. I think the CME group coming in and starting to allow Bitcoin futures and eventually these exchanges are going to have to be, all regulated, whether it's through the CFTC or not. There's going to be a lot more rules and a lot more scrutiny from these regulators watching what's going on. So a lot of the stuff that you're seeing today, I know they try to crack down on different Telegram pump and dump groups or ICO manipulation, which definitely goes on. I think we are going to see as this industry grows, as it brings in more attention and more money, it's definitely going to increase the scrutiny from regulators.
And with that, regulation coming in, and you talked about, relating it to the CME futures, there's a lot of people, including myself, as a trader, who don't really understand what the impact of CME will be. There's different opinions. Some people say it's validating it and will drive up the price of Bitcoin. But also others are saying that it's a potential to actually bring the price down because of the potential to short it. And also other people don't really understand that actually with the CME futures, are they even buying a Bitcoin or is it just a paper trade? What is your understanding of this and how it may, what you think the impact will be?
Yeah, the biggest impact and the biggest takeaway that I see from it and the biggest impact I see it having on the space is there's a few risks that are keeping institutional funds and larger accounts, whether they're institutional or not, that are keeping them from investing. Most of them are operational risks. Some are, volatility and normal risks.
When you say operation, what, like to hold in Bitcoin?
Yeah, holding the actual Bitcoin, storing the Bitcoin, making sure your funds are safe.
Right, okay.
Learning how, just how things operate in the space. One of the risks that they have to deal with is there's not a lot of ways for them to manage risk. Futures allow these larger players to do that. So suppose you're long $1 million US in Bitcoin, you want to hedge away some of that exposure in case Bitcoin is to fall. You can sell futures, and that hedges away or reduces or mitigates some of that risk. So it opens the door. It allows these bigger funds to control risk in a new way. I think it's bullish for Bitcoin, whether or not they're shorting or selling futures. I think it's bullish for Bitcoin because it gives those, it checks off another box for those institutional funds to come in.
And we had Coinbase announce they're going to be supporting institutional investments with $10 million exactly. minimum spends. We've also had this week, we've had the news that Square are accepting crypto. There's constant rumors about Amazon. So I don't know about you, but I kind of feel like we're really starting. Now it feels like this is kind of we're about to approach some kind of tipping point.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like every other week, it's almost a new tipping point that gets touched. So now, yeah, Coinbase allowing new custodial services, which is one of those operational risks I talked about. There's just not a lot of those out there. There's some boutique banks that allow it and some other firms that will help you store. Coinbase doing that is a huge step. Yeah, Square and all these other companies and when big announcements, when the more mainstream this gets, and we're going to continue to see this, the more that it's on CNBC and Bloomberg, I think Each little milestone makes me increasingly bullish in an asset that I'm already bullish on.
And it's interesting because, at the start of the year, we started with a market cap of $17.7 billion and people invested in Bitcoin, but it was growing slowly. I mean, yeah, it was growing quick, but relative to what it's done recently, it's been growing slowly. But it feels like now with the widespread news and the more people come to the space, actually the majority of the money is actually just really going into Bitcoin rather than into altcoins. And therefore, for a lot of people, just holding Bitcoin over the last few months would have been just a great investment. How do you feel this is going to carry on? Do you feel like the majority of money is just going to go into Bitcoin, or do you think they'll be going into other assets? Where do you think the institutional guys will be going?
Yeah, so even thinking about that question before, what do the institutional funds want to put their money in? Going back to liquidity a little bit, Bitcoin seems to be the only asset, big enough or with enough volume and stuff like that, that can even accept these institutional investments. If an institutional fund wants to take a position in some of these coins that are lower in this top 100, even in the top 100, coins in coin market cap, they're going to move that market significantly. I mean, I have retail traders that I work with that move the market on some of the coins and can't take positions in some of these small cap coins because when they buy, they move it up 10%. So I think Bitcoin is going to continue to benefit from institutional guys coming in more than anyone else. I think as the market grows and as some of these coins are able to grow their market cap and earn more volume, I think they will also benefit as well. But I think Bitcoin is the immediate beneficiary here.
And, looking at the top, the coin market cap, right high up in there, we have one called BitConnect. What do you feel about that?
I really haven't spent too much time diving into it, but just having a background and going to business school and, learning about what happened with Bernie Madoff and all these other high yield investment schemes, just running the numbers in a very rudimentary and looking at it very quickly. It's something that I'm staying very far away from. Any of these multi-level marketing schemes that are, guaranteeing whether it's 1% or whether it's a little bit less than 1% a day, it's going to be really interesting to see if Bitcoin does stop going up and if we see a massive correction. I'm not sure how BitConnect pays off that, whether there's, when this new flow of and YouTubers and Twitter guys are bringing in, a lot of people into this BitConnect coin. But if that new money stops in volatility or Bitcoin goes down, it's going to be really interesting to see where that goes. I don't want to say anything definitive, but I am staying far, far away from it.
Did you see the Bernie Madoff meme about BitConnect?
No, I
haven't. He was investing in crypto from his prison cell when he was buying BitConnect. What about Tether though? Tether's another one that keeps coming up. And I can't look. I'm seeing both sides of the argument. I'm seeing there's a dude on Twitter, BitFineX, who's constantly tweeting. He's saying a bunch more have been printed and the price is going up, and he's got it down as full fraud. But then I saw a counter argument that said, look, they don't have banking services. If somebody wants to come in and buy a million or 10 million of crypto, what they're doing is they're selling them 10 million of Tether so they can go straight into the exchange and trade. So I'm seeing both sides of the Tether argument, but there are enough people now that keep raising it as a potential concern. Have you looked into it?
I haven't looked into it as deeply similar to BitConnect. You know, I haven't paid too much attention to it. With this one, I'm less skeptical. BitConnect seems like that's a major red flag for me. Tether seems to, I don't buy the conspiracy as much. I think it's more a function of, like you said, that they really can't, you know, they don't have all the banking services available that they probably want. You know, if maybe they're matching when someone is buying a certain amount of Bitcoin, they generate a certain amount of tethers in case that person wants to sell Bitcoin and buy tethers. So I'm not paying too much attention to it. I think if one exchange was printing, you know, if it's Bitfinex and they're printing these fake tethers, I think the rest of the exchanges and OTC markets and that stuff would balance out. It would create such an arbitrage if they were really, you know, inflating the price that much in Bitcoin. I don't buy too much into it. I haven't, you know, audited Bitfinex or anything like that. I don't like Tether in that it, I don't think it is audited. So, but I don't think it carries any more risk than having your money on an exchange anyways. There's always exchange risk.
Well, yeah, but I guess some people like Tether, you know, like if in positions where I've wanted to move out into fiat, I've had to pay my exchange fees. Some people like using Tether to avoid that. So mm-hmm. they're essentially staying into fiat, but they're not in fiat. Have you done that or would you do that?
Yeah, I've done it. I try to limit the amount of money that I have on an exchange. That, you know, I keep, you know, the massive or the large proportion of my funds in hardware wallets. But if I am going to keep some money on an exchange, it definitely makes sense to not sell all the way out to USD. But I mean, that risk is always there. If your money's on an exchange, we see exchanges go down left and right, especially ones that are unregulated. And if you're a US citizen or if you're a European citizen, you're trading on an exchange that's in a different country, you're probably not protected. So that risk is always there. I don't think, you know, tethers carry a significantly higher risk than already being on an exchange.
And you mentioned hardware wallet. I mean, that's one of the most important things that people need to consider. You know, whenever I have somebody phone me up and they're like, look, I want to get into this, the first thing I do is tell them to go on Ledger and buy a Nano. Actually, I tell them to buy two Nano S. I say it's the first thing you should do. And, you know, I'm not going to ask you about your approach to security. Like, I don't tell anybody to want mine. But, you know, if new people are coming in, just try and make it clear to them how important is security.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually had one of my friends in real life, and slowly as they get into the crypto space, that's been one of the funnier things about having one of these Twitter accounts now that people look to, is they'll find my Twitter account and they'll say, hey, man, I didn't know you were in this. You know, how do I get invested? What are your first steps that I would take? And similar to you, this was the first time that I'd done this. Speaking to my friend yesterday, AJ, I said, you know, buy a hardware wallet even before you buy your Bitcoin or before you buy some Ether. It might not seem worth it right now, but it's only 100, what is it, 100 euros?
I think it's less than that. I mean, I think I got two for like 120.
Exactly. So it's, you know, even if you're only investing $100 right now, if that investment grows and Bitcoin's up, what, 600% this year, if you invest 1,000 or even 500 bucks or 100 bucks, it's worth it. It lets you sleep easier at night. And, you know, as your account grows, it's just one of those things that you have to do. It's not, you have to do it.
And one of the things we didn't cover, you know, I shot over it actually, is we didn't even cover ICOs. What's your kind of view on ICOs? I personally don't invest in them. I've done one. I did CFI, made a little bit of money, but I stay away from them now. Do you, you know, what's your view on this thing?
Yeah, I was big on ICOs this summer. And I think the market caught on really quick. I think some ICOs and some bad actors, there's obviously going to be bad actors that try to exploit any kind of opportunity when there's something like this and this much money in it. But what we saw is a shift earlier in the summer. They were raising the majority of funds from the public crowd sales. Very slowly, you start to see more of these private sales or the bonuses start to pop up. And these, you know, ICOs would still get sold out and they would still perform well. And then, you know, just in the last month or two, it's slowly shifted to now they're raising an equal amount of money in the private or the pre-sale, or, you know, these deals that aren't even on the white paper, and coins start getting dumped immediately when they hit the market. Until now, and you look at October and this month, and people have really caught on, and there's too many ICOs coming out, too many coins are getting dumped immediately at exchange. I haven't invested in an ICO for about, you know, almost 2 months now. Just for that reason, you can always buy the tokens, it seems, even in the oversubscribed ICOs, after it hits the exchange. I think people kind of caught on. I hope in the future, if they develop a better framework, I know they came out with SAFT, if they can develop a better framework that somehow incentivizes people, or if they're just pricing it more fairly and maybe not valuing their project at 40 million off the bat, if they, you know, if some of these founders and some of these companies have a framework and maybe choose a more fair valuation, I think, you know, there's definitely still an opportunity to do well in ICOs, but the holding period needs to be longer. The mindset needs to change from investors that you can't just flip these tokens. Now I only invest in ICOs if I was to invest in one, that I, you know, I'm investing in the company. I want that company to do well in the next year in the years to come. I don't think the flip opportunities are there anymore.
And yeah, how many, you know, if you're investing in a company, how many raise $200 million in the first round?
Yeah, exactly.
It just doesn't happen.
It's yeah.
And actually, that's why, I mean, I talked to you about CFD before I came here. I was, you know, I didn't invest in the ICO, and I wish I had of, but I was drawn to it because it actually had such a low raise, and it had, that felt to me like it was a bit more realistic. You know, I've worked in the startup space, and actually, you know, these days you struggle to raise money. If you've got no track record, you struggle to raise money unless you've got some kind of product. So it just feels like to me like the lower market cap rate, the lower ICO raises are the better ones. What do you think about that?
Yeah, lower raises are good. Even, I mean, if a project is raising a larger amount, as long as you can see on their white paper, if you can see in their roadmap, if you can see where these funds are going, if it's going to product development, if they already have a prototype, if they already have, you know, these things in development, and I understand where my money is going, then it makes sense. Some of these companies are just, you know, slapping on 30, 40 million or I don't think they're taking too much into account on tokenomics and what that actually means for their token and for their network. If they just assign arbitrary value and try to, you know, people caught on really quick. If a project assigns 60 million, what happens is it raises a lot less as opposed to if they maybe attach 15 million, they'd probably hit their cap. If they use 60 million, they might only raise 5 million because people understand, you know, how unattached those founders are from reality.
Do you think the ICO, we could call it a bubble, whatever, but do you think that was the thing that's maybe the suppressing the Ethereum price from growing in that there was too much downward sales pressure on it? Because yeah. Once, you know, once they've raised, they need the money to spend to hire the team, so they've got to sell their Ethereum.
Yeah, I think that's a factor. But I also think it's a great use case of Ethereum, and some people hate on the whole ICO movement. I think, you know, what they're doing is, what I like about Ethereum is they're really testing the limits on what we can do here, and they're comfortable. You know, they know some things are going to go wrong. They know the system isn't perfect, but I think a lot of positive things are going to come out of this. Obviously, there's some bad actors and some bad projects, and investors and speculators need to be careful. But I think overall, this is going to drive a lot of innovation. Good projects and good new technology is going to come from this. So, you know, I think Ethereum will continue to do well. Dollar price, as long as Bitcoin goes up, its dollar price should go up. Against Bitcoin, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, it made a small move today, actually. But there's been a lot of people out on Twitter shouting it out now, saying, mm-hmm. Look, they're seeing a big move for it. I mean, I got involved. Did you say you're not? You're not back in Ethereum?
No, I'm back in Ethereum. Okay. Yeah, I hold Ethereum.
Then there's some other things, you know, that are going to compete with Ethereum or going to bring new ICOs in. You know, EOS has come in. We've got Komodo doing its decentralized ICOs. The big rumor that NEO is going to be the only platform for ICOs within China. And what do you think of these coins? Are you invested in these coins? Do you think these are good long-term bets?
Yeah, I gave, it's funny, I gave NEO and I gave that to my free Telegram group, and I also took that trade a few days ago for a different reason. They had the Aphelion ICO coming out. I think NEO will do well. I think kind of the different, you know, they're allowing different programming languages to work on their platform more than Solidity. I think that's a good, you know, a good bonus there, a good benefit there. But with Ethereum, they're going to continue to, you know, they're the first mover. That's where the majority of these dApps are going. They're the biggest. It's the same thing with Bitcoin. I mean, it's just the biggest. It's these coins are going to continue to benefit in the short run. When people sign into Coinbase and all these new accounts are coming, they have a few coins they can buy, and it's Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin. They can't buy Komodo. They can't buy that. You know, so smaller amounts of money are going to move into those. They do have a potential to grow larger, but right now I would prefer to hold Ethereum.
And everyone wants to know what's going to be on Coinbase next.
Yep.
We saw what it did for Litecoin. I mean, I have my guesses. I think it's going to be the Ripple or Bitcoin Cash. Not that I want it to be either of those, but they do feel good projects. And actually, I've read a few times people think it might be BAT. I mean, do you have any thoughts on this?
I think from a corporate side, you know, just from the business side of things, the people that are backing Bitcoin Cash, it makes sense that Bitcoin Cash would get on there. I know there was a big Ripple rumor that it was going to get on there back when that Swell conference was coming out, and that whole conference flopped. So yeah, we'll see. I don't trade too much. I'm not very event driven or a news or a catalyst trader too much. It does help when there's, you know, that fundamental story going on in the background, but you know, I don't pay too much attention to it.
And you bring up Ripple. We talked about it beforehand. I've made money on Ripple. I'm not in it anymore. You know, when people first start investing in, it's almost like 50% of them ask me about Ripple. Should I get into Ripple? And I'm always, no, just stay away from it. It's just not worth it. What are your views on Ripple?
I'm staying away from Ripple. You know, especially watching it after that Swell conference, and just from speaking with, you know, there's a really nice benefit I get from having, you know, all these people contact me every single day and getting a nice pulse on the market, is I get to speak with a lot of very, very intelligent people in the blockchain space, and I respect their opinions highly. And almost all of them agree that they don't, it's kind of a unanimous vote that they don't like Ripple. If you are a Ripple supporter and you're listening to this right now, I apologize. But yeah, I'm staying away from Ripple. I think the technology is good and sure, but I don't understand why there should be a token attached. It just, the valuation seems a little too high for me. And no matter the news that comes out, it seems suppressed every single time.
Yeah, and you know what? The Amex news came out and the price jumps, and it feels like every time the price jumps and then it falls back down, I stay away from it. Okay, look, man, this is really cool. Look, before I move on, I just want to cover some things before we finish, but before I move on to the next question, like, any other cool investments you want to tell people about, or cool coins you think right now are hot, things that you would say get into?
Yeah, more than coins, I'm going to step back a little bit and take that more into sectors. I think the privacy coin sector, I think that will continue to benefit and outperform in the medium to long term. We're seeing a lot of these, you know, these uber high, or the ultra high net worth crowd, as they get into cryptocurrencies, and whether it's for legal reasons or, you know, not so legal reasons, a lot of people, it makes sense. I mean, even me or you or some of these bigger guys that are in Bitcoin, they don't want to know, you know, people don't want to let everyone else see where their money is. So I think these privacy coins are going to continue to outperform coins like Zcash, Zcoin, Monero, all these. I like that sector a lot.
Yeah, as I said to you, I was in Zcash before and it came out, but I took Rand's tip today and I went into Zcash. And actually, I bought enough for a Znode?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you know what? When I got into Dash, I think it was £14, you know, so it would have been £14,000 for a Dash Masternode. And now it's like, what, £350,000, which is out of step. But I've made money on Monero. I've made money on Verge. So there's some really good ones out there. I completely agree. Let's talk a bit about your business before we finish up, because thank you for giving me this, but you know, you do have a business. Let people know what you're doing. You know, you've got a group. There's a lot of groups out there as well, so yep. I'll cover that as well, but let people know what you're doing and what your business is and how they can find you.
Yeah, definitely. So I got into the space and started sharing my ideas on Twitter. I grew, you know, just because I think I was helping people more than make money. I was helping people understand what's going on. And I think when you have that understanding, you're able to feel more confident. You're able to build a process. You're able to, you know, just better manage risk with your investments. And that's probably the biggest, you know, the biggest thing that most people need to focus on. They don't realize is if you can minimize those drawdowns and stuff, you can perform really well. But you can find me on Twitter. I built a few Telegram groups after the Twitter, you know, kind of got a little bit outrageous trying to answer messages. Those free ones did so well that, you know, there's just not enough time in the day. I can't respond to all the DMs and stuff that I get. So I do have, you know, a premier group that I also have. It's capped at 100 members right now. It's the same stuff you see on my Twitter, my Telegram. It's really focused on just explaining, you know, what's going on, how to build a process, you know. It gives you a chance, an inside look, to see every single move that I'm making. And more than, you know, me making you money or providing a signal, it's really based on teaching you and teaching you, you know, methods or my process that you can then take, you know, if you only do stay for a month, you can use that process forever. You can use it as you continue to speculate in these assets, and you understand, you have the confidence to act and manage risk a little bit better. So you can find me on my website too. VentureCoinist.com has everything on there, and I'm always going to provide the free content too. So I have both those options for you guys.
And I'll provide all that in the show notes, all links to things, so everyone can, you know, find and access you. There are a lot of groups out there now. Some stand out as shady. I'm not gonna pull any names out. But what's your kind of general view on this? You know, some advice to people, because the reason people tend to join a group is because they very simply want to say, tell me how to make money.
Yep.
Tell me what to buy, when, and when to exit. You know, what are your views on the group space, and, you know, where do you differentiate yourself?
Yeah, so coming from the industry that I worked in, FX and derivatives, this market is very similar in a lot of ways. And what What this seems like is it's just a more immature version of a lot of the FX groups and academies and kind of educational services that I was seeing. So it really helped me having that knowledge and having that viewpoint. I've seen what works and what doesn't. Outlandish claims of being able to make 100 or 500% a month. I know that that's not going to work. I can also tell, you know, who has a background in finance, who actually knows what they're talking about versus, you know, someone who doesn't so much. So my only advice would be, rather than, you know, try to differentiate myself, I think regardless of what group you join, or if you join a group or not, a free group or paid, you're only going to get out of it what you put in. So it's the same thing with having a personal trainer or joining a group of anything. You know, if you join a group in crypto and you just expect to make money off the bat, it's not going to work, especially in a group like mine. I'm not just giving you signals to make you money. You know, I do a live stream every single day. I teach you how I'm charting. I show you, I break down my chart. What does this line mean? What value does this mean? How do you draw a fib? You know, what is this RSI indicator I'm using? What does this mean when Bitcoin goes up versus alts going down? What is my macro picture? So regardless of what group you join, mine or someone else's, you know, do your research. Be very skeptical. Be skeptical of me as well. And you know, just, you have to put in the work, is kind of my only advice.
And it seems like crypto's taken over your life. You're pretty busy with it, but, you know, give us a picture of what your day's like. What is it like for you now? Kind of what has this all done for you in terms of your life?
Yeah. Crypto has certainly taken over my life.
We have your girlfriend here, yeah. Not looking particularly happy about it.
Oh man. So I mean, it's, you know, like I said earlier, I went to school. I had the goal of getting a front office job or working in investment management or working on a trading desk or something. And crypto allowed me to do that immediately. And it allows me to do what I love full time. So I wake up, you know, 5 or 6 a.m. You know, sometimes I sleep in a little bit later and I don't set an alarm, which is also the nice part about running your own business and trading, is I don't have to set an alarm. So I wake up, whatever time that is in the morning, I get a workout, I look at the Bitcoin chart, understand what's going on, bigger picture, look at any of the trades that I may or may not have.
Hold on, that's a really interesting thing. So the first thing you do is look at the Bitcoin chart.
Always.
Where that drives your day.
Always.
Right,
yeah.
Okay, and let's explain that. Let's go through that.
Yeah, so I look at the Bitcoin chart and I break this down in my group. I give this on Twitter and I give it in my free telegrams. Bitcoin drives everything. Bitcoin drives all my decision making. So if I'm looking at Bitcoin and Bitcoin's up on the day, and suppose it just rose to the top of the channel. Let's look at price action for the last 2 weeks. Bitcoin rises to the top of the channel. You know, what does that mean? If Bitcoin starts to correct massively, you know, alts have historically done well over the last year when Bitcoin starts to correct. As Bitcoin rises to the top of the channel, it's historically been a good move to take profits and move into alts or fiat. So, you know, I look at the Bitcoin chart and that dictates every move for the rest of the day. If Bitcoin's hanging in a range that day and I see some massive resistance, yeah, play some of the alts. If I see Bitcoin and it looks very bullish, it's breaking through resistance, guys, maybe just sit back and watch. Don't be diving into alts, because the alts are going to continue to be suppressed.
Okay,
so I let Bitcoin dictate all my moves.
And is this a 7 day a week thing for you now?
Yeah, this is 7 days. I try to take some time off on Sunday, watch some football games.
And, Jason, who's your team? What, like my football or your football?
Oh, my football, American football.
Who's your team?
I don't even have a team. I just do it for the fantasy. I do it for the bragging rights. I got some buddies at home I play in the league with. I'm a hockey guy.
You're a hockey guy?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Do you go and watch, is it the LA Kings?
I've been to a few LA Kings games, but my team are I'm Philadelphia Flyers fan.
Right, okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, look, that's really, you know, that's a long day though, right? I mean, just Sunday, are you doing, you can give yourself any time to do anything else out of the space?
So I still work out. These last 2 months have been absolutely insane. So my work-life balance has been a bit more extreme than, you know, even extreme. So I also like to do Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I play hockey once I have some time. I haven't found a league down here yet. But those two things, and then also just trying to get a workout in every single day, that kind of clears my mind. Taking a walk in the morning. Other than that, I mean, it's not really work to me. So when I start working and I work with clients, you know, the only thing that bothers me is when my email inbox or Twitter DM or something like that fills up. It's never like, you know, I'm never working on this and over here pulling my hair. I enjoy it. It's fun every single day.
All right, man. And then, you know, just to close out with a few things, this has been great, by the way, just close out with a few things. Firstly, what does the future hold for crypto? Do you think, where do you think we're going over the next kind of 3 months, next year, next 5 years? And then what does the future hold for you, man?
Yeah, so in crypto, I mean, the sky's the limit, guys. You know, as this continues to grow and people don't really realize it, but I don't realize it either, because I'm in this bubble all day. I'm working with people that are only in crypto and that understand what Bitcoin and altcoin and these different coins do. But when I do leave my little office here and I go out into the world and I have conversations with other friends that aren't in the space, a lot of them still don't even understand. Some people still have this connotation with Bitcoin that it's only used for money laundering or to buy, some drugs on the Silk Road or something. So I think, I still think we are at the very, very, very beginning. And I don't even think anyone here or anyone out there can fathom how big this is going to get. For me, in my future, things are changing so fast just in the last two or three months. I have no idea. Ideally, in 5 or 10 years, I literally can't even say. Who knows? It'd be cool. I think what we're going to see down the road is, I think there's going to be family offices, and kind of what I wanted to do before I got into crypto is either run, an investment shop or an alternative investment shop and consulting with clients and helping them manage, their wealth and grow their wealth. And I think down the road, as these crypto assets gain, mass adoption and they become bigger, it'd be really cool to run a family shop or my own office or my own firm, helping clients kind of invest in these and understand these assets and the benefits it can bring.
All right. And then closing out, any specific reading material you recommend or resources, old school resources, new school resources, you'd say, look, if you're going to get into this space and you're going to trade and you can't hold, any kind of books or things that you stand out, or films, or, anything that's important for you.
Yeah. So, I'm a little bit different in that respect. I know a lot of guys will throw out their favorite books. I just got into the space just from doing, guys. So, there's so much stuff in this that a book can't teach you. And even if you do learn it, and I don't want to say don't read books, but, if you're reading a book, I think the best way to learn this is through a demo account, or just to dive in with just a little bit of money, some risk capital that you're okay losing that isn't going to affect your quality of life. One book that I did just read, I want to give him a shout out, Chris Bernisky. I just bought his book, and I've only read the intro in the first chapter, and it's been a great start. But for trading,
what's the book called?
I think it's, what is it? How it's. It's in the back, I don't know.
All right, man. I'll look it up. It'll be in the show notes.
You can look it up, but in order to actually learn about trading, I think you just have to do. I don't think there's anything you can read and it's gonna teach you the same skills or teach you the same lessons that doing and kind of just wrecking an account will do.
Cool, man. Any closing thoughts? Anything you want to add?
Thanks for having me on, man. And for anyone that follows me or anything like that, feel free to reach out. I like working with everyone, meeting new people in the space, meeting people like yourself. It's so fun. Everyone's so open and welcoming and ready to help each other. So feel free to reach out. You can see me at Venture Coinist.
Cool, man. We did it.
How great was that? How good was Luke? Big thanks to him for doing this. Hopefully you got a whole bunch of tips there you could start applying to your crypto trading strategy today. I suggest you go follow him. It is at Venture Coinist, but I will provide links to his website and all his social profiles in the show notes, which will appear on the website. Hopefully I'm going to have another interview out in the next couple of weeks, but I appreciate any feedback. So if you want to get in touch, you can contact me on Twitter at WhatBitcoinDid or via the website www.whatbitcoindid.com. If you can support the show, please do go and give a review on iTunes. It will make a big difference. Okay, listen, thanks for downloading the show. Hopefully I'll see you soon.